I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Today is the day. If you've been here before, you are in for a little bit of a surprise. If you are new here or think you know where you're going, don't feel left out. I have surprises here for you too, especially a bonus at the end that you will not want to miss. This is One Bite is Everything, the podcast that presents you with new ways of thinking about life's critical issues. There's just enough to give you something to chew on and definitely enough to make you hungry for more. I am famous for bringing you guests that will do just that, today's guest included. What's more is that this bite is actually everything, because when you dive in and understand what we're talking about fully, you will see how it is connected and rippling out into the world in such a powerful way. We will focus in on one bite, but don't be surprised if that bite checks a lot of boxes. This is the first day of this new iteration of the podcast. Since 2019, this has been the Talk Farm to Me podcast. Cutest name ever, with the most awesome t-shirts now on the rare and hard to find list. That podcast and all of the farm talking led to the creation of the Four Farmers Movement, as interviews with farmers revealed a shocking fact. Farmers are invisible. The Four Farmers Movement set out to change that by sharing farmer stories far and wide, dispelling myths, awarding grants nationally, and through other creative campaigns. Recently, Talking Farm on the podcast revealed a second truth. Talking Farm is rarely just about that. More often, Talking Farm is about you, community connection and vibrancy, definitely about your health, how the environment can be treated better and protected, and our economies made stronger. Hundreds of examples. And those examples, each one of them a small bite, connects to the wider world, unlocking real solutions from folks on the front lines who are making it happen little by little. And they leave traces of how we can all do our part, our own little bites, to contribute to broad-scale solutions. If we do nothing, things get worse. Here, we can find small actions that have a big impact on life's critical issues, one bite at a time. Today's guest is Maura Russell, or Mac as she is affectionately known. She is a consultant with a business degree and 4 young children. She's also a first-generation farmer of an urban micro-farm, Ad Astra Farms, in Maryland. She is on a mission to provide sustainably grown fruits and vegetables and education to those who want to grow their own food. Mac believes strongly in food justice, that access to healthy food is a right that should not be reserved for the wealthy and privileged, and puts her shovel where her mouth is in producing it and distributing it. Let's dig in.
I think that there is a very big interest in people growing their own food. Here in my town, I'm also a master gardener. Our master gardener group is doing a series of sessions to teach people about starting their own gardens, from starting seeds indoors to transplanting out to how to cultivate the crops. So I feel like there is a very big interest in growing food, both as just a hobby, but then also as a way to ease the financial burden of just being alive these days. It's expensive to live and it's expensive to buy groceries. And I think that people look at that as a way to have more control over what they're eating, to know that it's safe, but then also to help ease that financial burden as well. So there really is a lot of interest.
Mac has leaned into speaking engagements and some garden consulting in her area recently and is excited to continue that kind of outreach. In those sessions with beginning farmers, she shares her unvarnished truths about the hardships of getting started, as well as practical advice of what they need in terms of business structures, licenses, and finance.
Do you feel like people are questioning their food more, like maybe my food's not safe, or how did we get this tomato in the middle of winter and what did it live through? How did it actually happen? Or even meat? I'm just curious what you're hearing from the folks you interact with.
I think that a lot of people are very keenly aware of the use of chemical pesticides and herbicides to grow most of their food. I think people are also aware that there are more genetically modified foods that are finding their way into our food system.
Just so you know, in the United States, there are only 11 GMO foods. The labeling on food that includes the words non-GMO can make it seem like everything has a GMO version. Here's the short list: corn, soybeans, cotton, potatoes, papaya, summer squash, canola, alfalfa, apples, sugar beets, pink pineapple. I did not know until researching for this episode that we have GMO farm salmon called Aqua Advantage and Gal Safe pigs too. More on that in a future episode. And a side note on this side note, if your product is organic, say organic milk, it contains milk from a cow that did not ingest GMO corn or any other GMO.
But I think that people are still disconnected from that idea of seasonality. Like, it doesn't make sense for me to be able to buy a tomato in the middle of winter or a blueberry in the middle of winter. So I am finding that people are still kind of disconnected from that, because when you talk to them about being able to grow things in the winter, I'm getting ready to apply to lead a workshop on winter sowing at a local conference here. And people are definitely still feeling like, because I can buy it in the grocery store, I should be able to grow it at home in the middle of winter, right? Not quite.
When vegetables that are not in season are available in supermarkets, they are usually grown in highly controlled environments like greenhouses or hydroponic systems, indoor gardening, or they are imported from other countries.
So that seasonality concept is still eluding some of the folks that I'm talking to, but everybody is very much like, oh, I don't really want to eat food that's been sprayed. That's what you hear. It's like, I don't want to eat food that's been sprayed. And they'll give you their veggie wash recipe, however they're washing the vegetables to make sure that they're not getting those pesticides. But I do see an interest in eating organic and making it more affordable for that reason, to kind of avoid those chemical sprays.
You're going from a third of an acre to 3 acres this spring. Is that right?
That is right. I was literally just trying to decide today, like, when do I go out and tarp this section that I'm going to start working in a few weeks? It feels like spring is upon us, right? I'm looking at when to get started. Got my crop plan together, got a lot of equipment together, and now the volunteers are starting to show up. So folks who are willing to come out and help me get the land situated and start growing. And this is also the season to think about which markets you're going to sell in. And so I've got 3 markets that I'm targeting. They are larger markets than I was selling at last year. Right now, the plan is 1/2 acre to 3/4 acre to start for this year, and then to put everything into production 1/2 acre at a time after that. because it is still just me and I'm doing this by hand. So there is that, but hoping that with that increased production, I'll be able to make a more respectable showing at those farmers markets, because when you walk to a market stall, people want to see bounty. They want to see stacks and stacks of vegetables on the tables.
The expectations are high for Mac as a new farmer. The markets and their usual customers have standards of what they want to see, and there's no real understanding about the complications in that farmer's life. How would they know? So Mac just faces it and keeps plugging.
Life is just kind of that way. So I am in the middle of a divorce, an amicable split, but a split nonetheless. And it means big transitions in my home life. We've got four children that we're co-parenting, transitioning careers and transitioning family structure and taking on a role as a caretaker for my mother, who's in the early stages of dementia at the same time. It's a lot to balance with a full-time job.
And your friend had some interesting reactions. Legitimately, it isn't the most usual transition. So tell me a little bit about that experience.
It's definitely not the most normal transition. And there were definitely a few folks who were like, you've got an MBA. You don't have to go work as a farmer to make a living, as though farmers are not problem solvers and critical thinkers, as though farming and growing food reliably and being able to predict when you're going to harvest, as though there's not skill or even science behind that. So that was definitely a challenging part of my first year of operations.
This is a lot for any one person, any of this. But you know, life comes at you sometimes and you just have to keep pushing forward. And I think for anyone pushing boundaries in their own lives toward their dreams, it can be unsettling for others. It can be scary and a reminder that maybe they should be getting out there to do the big scary thing too. There's more though.
And then also running into a little bit of trauma. In the Black community, I feel like there is some trauma around living on the land, being connected to the land. You know, the first enslaved Africans were taken because they were agrarian people and because they knew how to work the land. But I think after so many hundreds of years of being forced to work the land, there are a lot of people who want nothing to do with it. And that generational trauma is there. There are people my mother's generation who are like, I worked hard to get off my parents' farms. And that's something else that I run into a lot. It's like, oh, you want to work on a farm? I grew up on a farm. I never want to do that again. That was so much work. It was so much hard work. But for every person that I ran into that was either like, girl, you're too educated, or no, that's too traumatic, I feel like I found two or three other people who were very much lined up with what I was trying to do, who totally understood it, and who knew my heart and understood why I wanted to make that transition. So, you know, life's about balance.
I really appreciate you bringing up the trauma around Black Americans being on a farm. And also, I think a conversation that you and I had about land and Black farmers. A lot of generational land was obviously not passed down through Black farmers for obvious reasons. But we had a conversation about a Black farmer that I interviewed, a row crop farmer from Virginia, and he has generational land. And to be honest, I didn't ask him how he ended up having it. I know it was his father's and his grandfather's, and it's somewhat unusual.
Mac and I had a conversation over Instagram direct messages about a recent episode on Black farmer inequity featuring Virginia row crop farmer P.J. Haney. Mac said she had what I would probably think was an unusual reaction to the episode, particularly around his ownership of inherited land and something that he said about other Black farmers without the same privilege. Here's her take.
I think I see it from both perspectives. He's got land, and whatever his family did to earn that land, to maintain that land, Absolutely. And I think that some of the things that he was saying, so he was saying, I'm standing in the gap for the row crop farmers, for the people who are fourth, fifth generation farmers. I'm not here for the urban gardeners and the folks who are just kind of playing in the dirt to grow a few vegetables here and there. And my reflex was, okay, I understand not like that you have a certain amount of fear or anxiety around your farm being successful and not wanting to be the person who loses the generational family land. I get that pressure. I totally get that pressure. I feel like it's probably similar to the pressure I felt when I was going through college as a first generation college student, wanting to hold my family up and prop my family up and represent them well. But at the same time, he's got the privilege of that land. He does have the privilege of that land. I and a lot of other urban farmers are struggling to find places to grow. And urban farms can be very productive. You could feed multiple families on a plot of land that is probably about the same size as the one I started my CSA on.
A little reminder here. CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. It's a farming model where consumers, often local residents, buy shares or subscriptions directly from a farm. In return, they receive regular deliveries or pickups of fresh produce, meat, eggs, other agricultural products throughout the growing season.
I fed six families from that little plot of land and got enough to take to market and got enough to donate out of that little plot of land over the course of the year. And so I feel like, who's showing up for us? You know what I mean? Who's showing up for us as urban farmers who want to bring our food systems local, who want to restore the soil where we live? Most people, when they think of farmers, they think of someone like that farmer. And if there's not unity of purpose, we're all growing food, we're all trying to feed people. If there's not unity of purpose, then where do we go? Like, how do we make progress? And as one Black farmer to another, how do we bring people back to the land? How do we reconnect people to their food if you're willing to stand in the gap for one kind of Black farmer, but not for everyone else? So that was my reflex when I heard that episode and the things that he was saying.
I want to stop here for a second to underscore this bite. Mac is bringing up something really important that transcends the community of Black farmers. Really the community of all farmers and all of us. To have a community, locally or one of a larger scope, we have to be sensitive to others' circumstances. How can we make progress if we separate ourselves from one another? I am for these people and not those. It's a nugget to think on. It matters to the kind of community you want to have and to be a part of. I think about this with regard to the farmers and the non-farmers. We are all one community. Being connected is important. Having an understanding of one another is also important. Anyway, I will link the episode Mac is talking about in the show notes for you to listen to. It is a great story, and this conversation bridges an important gap. Also, here, I wanted to give you some context. The percentage of Black farm owners in the United States is relatively low compared to other racial groups. According to the USDA, as of the 2017 Census of Agriculture, Black farmers accounted for approximately 1.3% of all farm operators in the country. Mac's word of the year is transition, that's for sure. But she's not holding back. The work she is bringing to the community has a deep meaning and a true mission. It's sustainably raised food, but it's more than that.
It's important to note that I farm between the two richest Black counties, majority Black counties in the country, and there are dozens of food deserts in these two counties, which is mind-blowing. And I forget exactly what the USDA definition of a food desert is, but you got to get in the car and drive so many miles to get access to fresh food. It's the gist of it.
The USDA defines food deserts as areas with limited access to affordable and nutritious food, especially for low-income households or those with restricted transportation options. In urban areas, a census tract is considered a food desert if residents live more than a mile from a supermarket, while in rural areas, the threshold is typically set at more than 10 miles. Factors such as income levels and vehicle availability are also considered when determining food desert status.
I wanted to do my part to increase people's ability to get that food. And to me, that meant growing food locally. That meant selling at local markets. It meant building in a food donation component to the business so that people who can't afford to get food have access through my farm and through our partners. So At Astra Farms is part of the Prince George's County Food Equity Council, and we're registered donors with the Food Rescue Program. As part of the Food Equity Council, there are working groups that address urban agriculture and land use, but then there are a lot of partners from state agencies who bring in components like free lunch and things like that. And we all partner together to elevate the needs to our legislators. And so there are group advocacy actions. There are more tactical components like the food rescue component, where we partner with local food distributors to give food out. And so my farm is part of that council. We regularly donate the first 10% of everything that we grow through that partnership, because people deserve the dignity of fresh food. And so I want that to continue to be part of what we do in expanding access to fresh food. We are also a SNAP retailer now. I just got approved in the last month, and I actually learned that there is a SNAP online portal that will permit SNAP recipients to join CSA and things of that nature. And so I look at that as an important piece of making sure that folks get food.
Let's just unpack a few things here. SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, is the benefit that comes to families who need assistance affording food through the Farm Bill, a bill that has not yet passed in Congress. SNAP is the old food stamps program, and now families can use those benefits at a farmer's market when the farmer applies to be a provider. CSAs are also eligible. Do you see how growing fresh food and distributing it locally at a farmer's market or through a food bank is also about community, about the people, about being knit closer together, giving us all something important in common? I think you can really feel it here.
And then as part of my CSA, if they have to get in the car and they've got to drive to the grocery store, they don't have to drive anymore because now I can deliver to them. So that's what we're doing now. And then, of course, there's a future vision where maybe there's a little At Astra Farms satellite farm situated in each of these food deserts where people can have even more direct access to food. So that's the key part, our justice push for the farm. But over time, I see myself kind of building in more advocacy, partnering with other agencies similar to the agency that I'm trying to partner with for the tool library to do more to increase food access.
Now, when you were telling me that you are doing some speaking engagements, so you gave them the rough cut of how it went for you in your first year, warts and all. What was the roughest part, the biggest mistake? What was the piece that almost made you quit?
So I'll give you the piece that almost made me quit, but I will also give you the piece that kind of pulled me out of it. Like I said, I did not plan to go through all these transitions at once. I woke up one day and said, if I got 20 or 30 more years as a consultant, I'm not going to be okay. I'm not going to make it. I don't have it in me. And things lined up for me to be able to start farming right away, even though I wasn't really in a place where I had the mental or the emotional capacity to do so. But I told myself, this is a great opportunity to have a piece of land and grow on it. And if you don't take it now, then it's never going to happen. I know that's probably not entirely true, but that's how I thought it at the time. And so I think taking that on with everything else and trying to stand everything up by myself was probably the biggest mistake. Feeling like I had to do it all on my own, not leaning on my community at the beginning, was my biggest mistake. But the piece that brought me out was realizing that I did have community that could help me, even as just shoulders to cry on, but then also to help me with the day-to-day tasks on the farm, the bed prep, the transplanting, and things like that. And I feel like the people that I met through my beginning farmers training program definitely showed up for me in that way. My children showed up for me, even though none of them wants to be a farmer. Most of them were very happy to come out and help me water, help me harvest, and things like that. I think the other piece that kind of brought me out of it was this aha moment when I realized I can make my farming fit me. Why am I killing myself trying to meet these certain standards? Not safety standards, mind you, like we meet the safety standards, but like, take, for example, the size of a bed. There's a famous book called The Market Gardener, and the standard bed in The Market Gardener is what, 36 inches. And there's like a 2-foot pathway between those 36 inch beds. Well, I was struggling to reach to the other side of that 36 inch bed and tripping over myself in that 2-foot walkway. And I'm like, why am I doing this to myself? I'll make a narrower bed, a wider walkway. And if I plant a little more intensively, I can still get the same amount of food. So having that aha moment when I realized I can make this farming fit me in this 40-year-old body and still be as productive. And so I think leaning on community and taking some liberties with the way I approach the farming was what pulled me out of that dark place.
What is Ad Astra?
It's Latin for to the stars. I'm a Kansas girl. I was born and raised in Kansas City, Kansas. And our state motto there is Ad Astra per Aspera, which means a ruffle leads to the stars. And so when I started farming here, even though I wasn't back home, I wanted to give a nod to my home state because farming can be a tough way of life. And I have no illusions about that. Even in just this year of farming, it's been challenging, but it's very rewarding. And I also feel like it's a way for us to move our whole community in a direction where things are more equitable and just better, healthier and better. And so that's kind of where the name of the farm came from, wanting to give that nod to that home state, but then also having a vision of the farm being centered in the community and the whole community traveling that rough road to a great place together.
Maura, or Mac, Russell, farms sustainably, applying her MBA, her consultant's sharp assessment skills, her master gardener knowledge, and a ton of grit. She grows 50 to 60 different varieties of healthy fruits and vegetables that she gets to her community through a CSA, farmers markets, and food banks. She's working toward becoming a full-time farmer, and maybe you just thought that growing food was playing around in the dirt, but it's so much more than that. It's the healing of generational traumas, personal hardship, connecting with community, building community, making new friends who understand your path, and bringing old friends along to see your way through abundant piles of vegetables. Ad Astra, to the stars. You are a trailblazer of your own just by being here, where one bite is everything. Today, we connected with community and health with likely ripple effects deep into years to come. I look forward to seeing what happens when Mac is done with all of these complicated life transitions. That rough road definitely leads to the stars. I am your host, Dana DePrima, and as a bonus for joining me today, here is an experiment I have been playing with. Mac is our first participant. I am sure you have more in common with her than you thought. Have a listen.
What's your guilty pleasure?
My guilty pleasure is, it's going to sound so basic. Chocolate, always chocolate, dark chocolate, milk chocolate, don't care. A quality piece of chocolate is definitely good to have.
Give me a bucket list item.
Have you seen the like dining suspended in the air pictures. I feel like that picture makes the rounds on social media every once in a while. I'm not even sure exactly where it is, but yeah, it's like a hot air balloon, but it's got a table and it's like a fine dining experience suspended in the air. I would love to do one of those. Crazy as it sounds, but I think it would be awesome.
I always like to know if you've got a favorite book or movie that I need to read or see.
My favorite book has not changed in probably 30 years. It's a book called Things Fall Apart by Chinua Achebe. I come back to it and find something new every time I read it. I probably read it every couple of years. And just the wisdom and the storytelling and watching what happens to the ties that bind is always interesting. And I feel like I always learn something new about life and relationships between family members whenever I read it.
That's the bonus. I am your host, Dana DePrima, and this is One Bite is Everything, the podcast that presents you with new ways of thinking about life's critical issues. I hope it got you thinking like it did me. See you soon.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.